T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Hall, mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
I want to talk about these Cubs and what they're doing.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. David on vacation, the great Tom Thayer, kind enough to sit in, and we are delighted to welcome in Jed Hoyer on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram Hotline, home of the real deal. Jed, of course, the Cubs Executive Vice President and General Manager. Good morning, Jed. How are you?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
We're doing great, and obviously we're anxious to get the second half of the season going, and I thought we could ask you just to start out with a positive. What are you happiest about? What in the first half? You know, we get a lot of panicked phone calls and a lot of people worried about different things. What do you guys look at? You know, I think we kind of understand where the problems are, but what is it that you look at and say, wow, that's really going well?
That's a great question, and I appreciate it. You know, I was going to say, and I said this last time I was on the radio, I think that sort of lost in some of the frustrations we've had about our overall offense is the fact that we have a lot of guys having really great years. A number of guys, you know, I think, Chris Bryant's bounce back year is something that I think is certainly a nice silver lining for us. He's been fantastic. Wilson Contreras, the same thing. He really struggled in the second half of last year. He bounced back and has had a monster year. Hobby has continued what he showed last year. So I think the fact that we're having some really good individual performances and a couple of guys, notably Bryant and Contreras, the guys that, whether through injury or through poor performance last year, were part of our struggles offensively at the end of last year. Those guys have been great. They've been all-stars. And I think that probably more than anything, the fact that those guys bounce back to become stars again is something that I think will certainly help us in the second half.
Hey, Jed, I was reading an interesting article, and it comes from Pro Football Talk, and it was by Chris Ballard, who's the general manager of the Indianapolis Colts. And throughout this lengthy article, he brings up how much respect he has for the leadership of the Chicago Cubs, yourself and Theo. And it's interesting because he talks about the impact that some of the guys in his background have on his decision-making process when you go through these difficult times. When you go through times like this or you have a break and you start thinking about some of your mentors, the influences, the advice that they would give you, who are your go-to guys that you think about that help you develop your thought process and into your career?
It's a great question. And obviously I've been with Theo for a long time and I've learned a ton from him, but he's there every day. You know, the managers I've been with have really been helpful to me. Notably, Terry Francona, Bud Black, and Joe. I think all three of those guys, really calm and measured. They see the game incredibly well, and they always assess each game or each section of season the right way. But hourly, they're positive. They're the same person every single day. And I think that's a key in baseball, is that we do this every night, and you're going to have ups and downs. You know, we had a stretch of season where we were, 23-7. We played as well as anyone in baseball. We now have a stretch of season where we really struggled and frustrated everybody, ourselves included. And I think that, being around guys like that and learning from them and seeing how they assess things, but also how measured they are and how much they realize that this is a marathon and we can't get too high and too low, that's always been really helpful. And then I think, on the scouting side, Bill LaJoy was an old scout. He'd been a GM of the Tigers in '84, he was probably the first older scout that really sort of took me under his wing and really tried to teach me how to evaluate players, how to think about putting a team together, and even now, He's been gone for a while. But even now, I'll think back on different things he taught me that are really helpful. So I think in this game, you know, I came up pretty young, and having, you know, veteran guys that are willing to take the time is really helpful. And, you know, for me, it's a good thing to hope for going forward. You know, I want to have that role in some other people's lives. You know, as I, you know, move on in this game and get older and more experienced, hopefully I can pass some things along, you know, the way those guys did.
This front office show presented by the Magellan Corporation. And Jed, you know, along those lines, I think it's very interesting to hear you say that about the calmness of the managers and the influence that has on you, especially as a young executive. So what is the key then to dealing with the noise? You know, every once in a while, Theo will come out and say something like, hey, we're not blaming Joe. We have a blame here. Like, you have to be monitoring the noise, but how do you live with it? It just seems like there is this weird kind of panic or you know, fear and loathing that you got to kind of get through sometimes in the course of a season.
Yeah, no question. It's difficult. There's no perfect way to do it. You know, you try to think about, you know, dividing up the season into maybe, you know, 10-game chunks or 20-game chunks so you don't get, you know, too high or too low on individual games, but we all know that can be difficult. And I think that's one of the real skills in this game, and one that we know we're never going to master, but we try to get better at it, is realizing that, you know, this is a sport where you know, the best teams win 6 out of 10 times. You know, this is not football. It's not the NBA. You're not going to dominate your opponents. And so knowing that, you know, trying to figure out what's real, you know, what's a real hot streak, what's a real cold streak, is incredibly difficult. And right now, I think we're at that point. I think that, like I said before, we had a really good streak. We had a really bad streak. And, you know, the good news is that through all that, you know, the second half will define this team. You know, luckily for us, no one has run away with our division. You know, we could be in the position of a Boston or a Cleveland or an Oakland. They've had good first halves, but the team in first place got really hot. You know, we were fortunate. You know, we didn't have that. And so ultimately what we do over the next 2.5 months is going to define this team, and that's a good position to be in.
Hey, Jed, because it affects both pitchers and hitters, is the baseball too much of a topic at this point in the season? Because throughout the All-Star break, it seems like outside of the amount of home runs or the way the game went, that's been the topic of the week.
Yeah, you know, I was just telling someone the other day that, I know with our players, it's been a constant source of discussion. And I'm sure if I'm hearing that from our players and having those discussions, you know, that means that everyone's having those discussions. And so I think it is too much of a topic, but I can't blame the players. You know, you think about it, if all of a sudden what you do for a living is changed dramatically, it's really difficult to mentally adjust to that. You know, if you're a starting pitcher and you give up a 3-run homer on a pop-up to left field, you know, those are 3 runs that go on your ERA. That's hard to just, you know, wash away. And so I do feel like with the pitchers, it's been a constant source of frustration. And I think even for executives, I think one of the hardest things for us is, you know, the thought of, you know, what's going to happen going forward. You know, is this the ball we're going to use in the future? If so, that's fine. We just have to adjust our scales. Is it not going to be, you know, this is something that mentally is hard to deal with because you don't know what, you know, what's going to happen going forward, and you don't know, you know, exactly what to make of these numbers. So I think it is too much of a topic. I hope it recedes in the second half. But my fear is that it won't, because it's going to get really hot in August and the ball is going to fly more. And I think this is here to stay in 2019. I think people are just going to be talking about it.
How do you feel about second base and the kind of up and down performances you've had from a lot of different guys there? How do you see that position flushing out moving forward?
Yeah, that's been, you know, one of the things I think that's been our hallmark is we've been really balanced around the field. Almost every position every year is, you know, above average. And, you know, this year, second base has just been a frustrating position. I think obviously Zoe, you know, being gone is a part of that. But Descalso has really struggled since the first, you know, 10 days of the season, and that's been part of it. Ian Happ has been working on a swing in Iowa. That's been part of it. So, you know, there's no question that's been a position that we've been, you know, cycling guys through, trying to get someone hot. And it hasn't happened yet, and we'll continue to do that because I do feel like what's made us really good is our depth. And right now, this is probably one of the only times I can remember, you know, since we've been good, that we haven't felt that deep. You know, we right now we've got some guys struggling, and we've got some guys, you know, not here. And I do feel like we need to get back to that feeling where you got, you know, 1 through 12 as far as the position players go. You're going to get a good at bat. You're going to get a guy that grinds, you know, grinds things out. And you're going to play good defense out of each guy. And I think we need to get back to that place.
You know, I was talking yesterday about Kimbrel, and I was saying I'm not going to have any judgment on him until at least 5 appearances after the All-Star break. What could he do for that position that you guys brought him in here for? If he comes out and he becomes as destructive as he was in the past of his career, how much confidence and how much help could that give the entire bullpen?
I think it's the whole team. I think that, you know, when you have a guy at the back of the game that you feel like, hey, if we can just pass the baton to him, it's over. Mentally, that's a huge lift for everybody. And obviously, he's been that for almost his entire career. You know, he's still working his way back. You know, I think that his stuff, I thought, would look fantastic on Saturday night. That was the probably the first time, I think, with us, that he just looked like the dominant, you know, Craig Kimbrel stuff where, you know, hitters were really having a tough time even putting a decent swing on it. But there's going to be some inconsistencies. You know, even in that outing, he hit a guy in the foot. He walked a guy. So I think, yes, giving him some time, I think, is fair. But I do think the lift that gives everyone is tremendous when you feel like you just have to, you know, pass the baton to that guy. And listen, I think our bullpen is really well set up, you know, going into the second half, and I'm confident that that can be a strength of our team. Getting a little bit of a break and a rest and allowing those guys to reset, I think, will help us. And, you know, hopefully we can really get on a roll and, you know, get some good starts and hold some leads. And we know that's the best way to feel consistent about your team. Maybe getting 6 or 7 innings out of a starter and getting good relief pitching, you start winning those games, you know, 3-1, 4-1. That makes everyone feel a lot better, that you don't have to score a ton, that you don't have to scramble for wins. You know, clean wins, I think, make everyone kind of calm down and feel good about your team.
Jed, we've been talking this morning a bit about something Chris Bryant said. He was talking about Joe Maddon. Let me read you this quote. He said, "I honestly don't think there's anything else he can do. I've seen a big change in him, just how he approaches each and every guy. He's way more involved. He's talkative. He's positive every day. I love him. I love the way he runs the team. He's been doing everything right for us. We have to play better to show that he deserves to be here. A lot of that falls on us. We just haven't performed the way we should. I can think of a handful of ball games that we should have won, and that whole narrative would be much different, but it hasn't been that way, and we hope to change it. Certainly, he's not getting that blame." Is that accurate? Do you agree with what he says there?
Yeah, I think Joe's been incredibly active and engaged this year. There's no question about that. I think he and Chris have always had, you know, a really strong relationship. I think that, you know, that's his, the manager that, you know, walked in his office the, you know, the first day back when we were in the old clubhouse. And I think they've always had a strong bond. And I think Joe's always been a nice sounding board for him. But yeah, I think, you know, we're all in this together. I think that's the, you know, that's the most important takeaway of all of this, is that, you know, we're all constantly having discussions about how to improve, how to get out of this rut right now. Whether it's, you know, Theo, Joe, me, our players that have been here for a long time. You know, one of the best things about continuity is you can fall back on shared experiences. And so, yeah, I know Theo's had a number of conversations with players. I have on the road last time, being able to talk to those guys about what they're feeling, what they're thinking, how do we get this right? You can't do that with a guy you just brought in this year who hasn't been a part of our success. I think people like Chris and Anthony and a bunch of the guys that have been here for a while, we can have those discussions, and I think that's really meaningful. So, you know, I think Chris, you know, is taking a lot of responsibility on the players, and I think that's a great thing, and I think it bodes well for the second half.
Jed, Alzolay and Zobrist, do each of them have a role with the Cubs, or is there too much unknown about either or both of them to even answer that at this point?
Yeah, I think they both do. Obviously, with Ben, you know, we're always trying to be respectful of his situation and you know, not put any timetables on it. But I think he's going to help the 2019 Cubs the rest of the way. I think Adbert will as well. You know, one of the things with every season is that you need to get, you know, some unexpected lift from somebody. It happens every single year. You know, just what jumped into my head as I said that was, you know, last year I felt like, you know, we picked up Jesse Chavez in a small trade kind of around this time, and our bullpen was struggling, and he was a huge lift, you know, from a guy that we were sort of getting to help stabilize the bullpen, but certainly not throw, you know, huge innings against the Cardinals in his first series here. And so I just think you're going to need unexpectedly good performances out of guys in order to get where we need to go. And, you know, those guys, you know, are sort of in that category, and we have a number of other guys. But we're going to need a lift from someone not named Bryant or Rizzo or Contreras or Baez or those guys. Like, someone's going to have to step up. And, you know, that's what's fun about, you know, the baseball season. You don't really know what to expect. You just know that it's not going to play out exactly as you think.
The division was supposed to be really good, and everybody thought it was going to be the best division in baseball. And, you know, I guess you could argue that it's really good because everybody's good, but it hasn't been as good as anticipated. And you're leading it by half a game. So even though you struggled a little bit, you're leading by half a game. Does the fact that you're still in first place affect how you approach this trade deadline? And, Jed, obviously this is a new reality we're in where it's July 31st or bust. There's no other way of getting better there. So do you have a plan yet, or do you have to wait and see what happens in the division the first couple weeks of the second half here?
Yeah. You know, I think I'd fall back on what I said before. I think that we're just fortunate to be in first place. I don't sort of take any happiness in that. I think being four games over 500 is how I view the team. I think that we're still at that point in the season. You know, that obviously as you get into September and stuff, you look at, you know, you're going to look at, you know, the standings based on game, you know, one game or half a game. But, you know, right now I think that's how I see it. We're very fortunate. We're in first place. We haven't played like a first place team. You know, but that's where we are. And like I said before, the truth is we're very lucky that no one ran away with the division. And that gives us, that puts us in a good position. And obviously that position really matters at the trade deadline, to your point. It does matter as you think about making acquisitions, because, you know, every team is going to be more aggressive with a chance to win the division versus a chance to just have a one-game playoff. So it does make a difference. But certainly, you know, the last, you know, 60 games or so haven't felt like a first place team. You know, on the division part, there's no doubt that I think that Milwaukee and St. Louis both are probably a little bit frustrated with how they played as well. I think they're probably having similar discussions. Both teams had really good stretches, and both teams had really bad stretches. And so I think that's right, that the division hasn't been quite as strong in terms of one loss record, but I will say it's the only division in baseball where everyone's trying to win. And that does make a big difference. There are no games that we have in our division against a rebuilding team. Now, every division is a team that's coming in trying to beat you. Every team is trying to make the playoffs. And that makes a difference. And that's going to affect the one loss record at the end of the year with whoever wins our division. So I do think that while it hasn't been the sort of juggernaut division everyone expected, I still feel like it's a lot different than other divisions, and I think that's going to make a difference.
Great stuff, Jed. Thanks a ton. It's always a joy to talk to you. Really appreciate the insight.
All right, guys. Enjoy Thursday.
Okay, buddy. Thank you. It's going to be fun to get to the second half of the season.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I think Joe's been incredibly active and engaged this year. There's no question about that. I think he and Chris have always had, you know, a really strong relationship. I think that, you know, that's his, the manager, they, you know, walked in his office the first day back when we were in the old clubhouse. And I think they've always had a strong bond. And I think Joe has always been a nice sounding board for him. But, yeah, I think, you know, we're all in this together. I think that's the, you know, that's the most important takeaway of all of this.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is Jed Hoya. We just had a chance to talk to Jed. Tom Thayer, of course, sitting in for David, who is on vacation. And, I like talking to Jed. I like talking to Theo. It's good to talk to intelligent people about what they're doing. It makes you feel more confident about the idea. Whatever, you know, I think it's of great value to understand what the plan is, to understand what a team, to remember kind of what the idea was to begin with. And I'm looking forward to talking to John Paxson, because we can go back and talk about their kind of sneaky good off season, because they had a plan and they followed their plan. And, they, you know, again, we're not talking about the Bulls in terms of winning an NBA title. We're talking about them at this spot in their development and whether or not they've done enough to get themselves maybe into the playoff conversation.
Well, I mean, that's everybody's hope. You know, it seems like with these, how long these seasons are, basketball and baseball, there's always so many questions. I think the Cubs have as many question marks now as they did at the start of the season.
That's a good point.
You know, because you talk about the leadoff hitter, who's going to play second base, where the pitching staff is going.
Sure.
So it's kind of, it's a never-ending battle of questions. And it's just like, you know, in the basketball season, there's things that other teams do can put questions in your mind about where you're going.
Right.
So
I think that with the Cubs, it's a little different because we have these, you know, expectations of championship. They have expectations of it. So,
good.
So, yes. So we don't just look at the Cubs, hey, they're a half game in the division. They got control of this thing. We look at them and we say, gosh, can they really play with the Dodgers? Can they beat up on the Yankees? Are the Astros that much? We're not looking at the smaller questions and the buildup and stuff. I mean, we are. We're obsessed with our local teams, but we're also, it's the eye on the title thing that changes the conversation with the Cubs. You know, the White Sox are below 500 and, you know, two games below 500 and have their share of issues in terms of we talked about the rotation to begin with earlier this morning. The fact is, I think Sox fans are feeling great because of where they've come from and because they seem to be going somewhere. With the Cubs, it's championship or bust.
Well, so Theo and Jed, they have experience with the World Series
and
with multiple teams. John Paxson has championship experience with multiple teams in the Bulls.
Yep.
You know, one thing that the Sox, you got to stop talking about only getting to 500. I think that's a distraction in championship desires. Because, in baseball, it's a good stepping stone. It's a good, you know, watermark. But you got to start conversations around that locker room with this young talent about winning and winning championships. And I know that, you know, there's, you know, questions in the positions, questions with Abreu, questions about the young pitching staff. But if these guys continue to develop and they ignite the World Series, that's the only thing that's going to help them get beyond that 500 mark.
It's funny because, you know, Tom, obviously you're well known in town in part because you're an 85 Bear. And the 85, when Ditka came in, that was the first time I remember a coach coming in, a Bears coach coming in and talking about a championship, talking about a Super Bowl. And lo and behold, that's the only Super Bowl this team has seen. Now, other coaches have come in and talked about it since, but that was the first time I saw it happen. And I think it's important. I think what you're saying is absolutely right, that you have to have the goal of getting to a championship in order to do it.
You know, in my football background, going back to my high school coach, Gordy Gillespie,
sure,
he was all about success. We were not giving the opportunity to lose, and we weren't fancy. We didn't throw the ball. We didn't punt very much. We ran the ball, and we played hard defense. But he ignited in the minds of young football players the effort that you had to put forth in order to win. And it carried through the desires to go to Notre Dame and play at Notre Dame and earn a position, earn a starting spot, hold on to that starting spot and everything else. And then when I went to play for George Allen, that's what he talked about. He talked about winning and success in championships. And then you go on to play for a team that what they accomplished in 84 and what their desires were in 85, the conversation continued. So it's got to start and it's got to continue through everybody's career. And if you're a player that has success in your background, it's the same conversation that you need to bring to young players in whatever team you're traded or moved to.
All right, we're going to get a scoreboard update from Kevbo, and then we're going to talk to John Paxson next.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. David's on vacation, and we have the great Tom Thayer filling in for him, and what a delight to welcome in John Paxson, the Vice President of Basketball Operations for the Bulls. He joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram Hotline, home of the real deal. And maybe our listeners don't realize it, but we now have two men on the air that single-handedly propped up the collective GPA of the entire athletic department back in the day at Notre Dame. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great.
And you and Tom were...
He was a 4.0. I was like a 1.75.
Yeah, but the thing is, football players didn't have to go to class. See, that's the thing. So,
a long and storied tradition.
Just kidding. I'm just kidding. Honest.
So, John, I'm just curious. Obviously, there was, I think it was $3 billion spent on the first day of free agency. Do you look at something like that and just curse that you're not still playing? Is that when you see the money thrown around like that?
Tom will attest this. There's nothing you can do about it. And the guys I feel sorry for are, you know, the guys like, you know, back in the 70s and, you know, the Oscar Robertsons of the world and, you know, the guys that really laid the foundation for the game. They're the ones that have to be looking at this thing now and saying, you know, that they could have been playing in this era making a ton of money.
Hey, John, what you see what Toronto and Cleveland has done the last couple off seasons, does that change the timing for the way you think about how quickly you can get good or how quickly you want to, you know, get back to the level you need to be?
Well, I don't know if it's so much what Toronto and Cleveland have done. I think, you know, 2 years ago on draft night, we traded Jimmy Butler, and we got what we felt was a good package in order to start our rebuild. And since that time, so just a little over 2 years ago, we've added LaVine, Markkanen, Chris Dunn, and then last year we got Wendell Carter in the draft. We traded for Otto Porter this past year, which, you know, we were trying to be realistic in terms of looking at this summer. So we took some money in on that deal. And then this summer we were able to get Kobe White, and then sign, you know, a couple of guys and Thaddeus Young and Thomas Satoransky. So I think we've made some really major changes in 2 years. The bottom line, Tom, is we need to get competitive again, and that's where we have to start. And I'm very realistic, and we all know this, that you need stars in this league to win at the highest level. And right now we're trying to develop some young players. We think Markkanen has a a real chance to be a special player, but he's got a long way to go. We believe that Zach LaVine also has a chance to be that kind of guy, but we understand it takes time. We're just trying to build a team right now to get as competitive as we can and hopefully be a good team. I think on paper right now, we're a much better basketball team than we were last year.
You know, John, on the side of the Super Bowl ring, Dicka had a word put in there, and he says ace, and it's attitude, character, and enthusiasm. In watching the summer league games, maybe I don't know anything about basketball, but I love what Gafford is bringing.
Oh, my God.
I mean, he's got good. A lot of energy. He looks big. He runs the court well. He's got great enthusiasm.
How did he fall the second round?
Well, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, you know, and sometimes in the draft, people get locked in on guys and they say, if this guy falls to us, we're going to take him. And so who knows? But Daniel's got a long way to go. But here's the thing with centers in our game today. The way the game's being played, you really have to be one of two things. You have to be a space the floor type of center that can shoot the ball and give driving lanes to perimeter players. Or you have to be a guy like, you know, the everyone points to Clint Capella, because what he does is he sprints the floor every possession. He can screen, roll to the rim, catch the ball, and dunk it. And then on the other end, he protects the rim. So really, those are the two type of bigs that we have in the league now, at least in terms of centers. And Gafford seems to fit that second mold where he can do those type of things. So, you know, we've added some pieces to the front court, and we haven't officially done another one, but we have a spacing five that we're going to sign here soon, hopefully. And he's going to be a young developmental guy, but we do like his upside, and hopefully over time, you know, the beauty of these second round guys, we're able to sign them for a long period of time at low dollars, and we have a real opportunity to try to develop them.
And John, you know, this looks like this is your team. You know, the guys that we're looking at here, it seems like you've put together exactly what you talked about doing. Mm-hmm. You got the toughness of a Thaddeus Young. You got Satoransky is another one of these versatile players. You mentioned a shooting five, and obviously the draft. I can't wait to see what Coby White looks like when you're up and running. We talked last year about what the goal is, and the goal was growth. Is the goal playoffs now? Has this shifted into a different sort of a different level of the rebuild?
Well, I think always, When you step onto the court as a coach or a player, your goal has to be to win at the highest level you possibly can, whatever your potential is. And so if playoffs is something that we're good enough to move towards, that's great. But like I said earlier, we need to get back to being a hard playing competitive team. And I think a lot of it, oftentimes is you reflect, you know, the coach dictates your attitude as a team. I think Jim Boylan brings a toughness and an attitude to our group, which we need. And, so that's a big thing. But I never want to sit here and say, hey, we're going to do this or that. My thing, you know, we've had these 2 years that have been rough, and we can point to a lot of things. We have had a lot of odd injuries that, you know, are tough to deal with, and it's difficult on all of us because, you know, we sit there at games and you watch your fans come in and support you, and you're putting out a team that you know isn't at a level that you want them to be. So we first and foremost need to stay healthy. We need to come together as a group. I think we have a deeper basketball team. You know, I haven't even mentioned, you know, last year we missed Denzel Valentine, who didn't play the whole year because of an ankle injury. And, you know, Denzel as a complementary type piece, he can pass it, he can shoot it. Another guy who can space the floor for us. So I think we have some depth that we haven't had in the past. But I make no bones about this. Our success or lack thereof is going to be determined by the growth of these young guys that we have. And, you know, in particular, guys like Lowry and Wendell and Zach. Otto is still a 26, 27-year-old player that we didn't get to see much of last year. But when we did, we thought he did some really good things for us. And so again, it's a tough business where you want the superstars, you want to do what the Clippers are doing and the Lakers are doing, but we're realistic right now. We're not in that position. We hope that in a couple years, with the development of these young guys, players around the league view us as a destination port where they can win at the highest level. And I believe we'll be there if our young guys perform the way we hope they will.
Hey, John, what's your take on replay? Is, you know, it's weird how they go about the replay business in the NFL. You got a guy up in the booth. You got a little bit of time to view the play to see if you want to make the call. Are you for this? Do you think it's going to complicate the game? Do you think it'll slow the game down at all?
Well, that's the balance the league is always addressing, is flow of the game. And but they also want the plays to be right, especially, you know, last 2 minutes of the game. So the league spends a ton of time looking into all the replay issues. You know, we have this replay center back in New York that every night there's a group of officials and video people that are watching every game, so that, you know, when you see NBA games and the referees go to the replay monitor, they're talking to the replay center back in New York. So it's good from the standpoint that, you know, you're trying to get everything right, but this is still a subjective game, and referees have a very difficult time calling things in real time. Our athletes, like in football, our athletes have gotten bigger, stronger, faster. It's difficult to see everything in real time, but I think, you know, when you start when you look at things that happen in the last 2 minutes and you're able to correct those and make sure that you get it right, that's a good thing that we have. And this year they're gonna experiment with the coaches challenge, where one time a game a coach can can ask for a clarification on whether it's a goaltending or a foul call, and you just hope that doesn't stop play for a long period of time, because that's not good for players or the fan.
John, you mentioned the goal is staying healthy. It was disappointing to see Wendell Carter having a core surgery. That kind of came out of nowhere for me, just as a fan. What was that anticipated? Was that a new injury? What happened there?
Well, you know what, he's had a little bit of that since high school, and we knew that he played through it in high school. He played through it at Duke, and last year, same thing. Just it wasn't anything that really limited him. It would just get sore. And so when he broke his thumb this year, and he had a chance to, you know, just kind of quiet his body down, he was feeling good. Our protocol was to work him out this summer, ramp him up for summer league to see how he felt, and if there was any discomfort, we were going to address it. And we actually, toward the end of the season, sent him to see a couple of specialists. Their determination at the same time, you know, we followed their guidelines primarily of let's ramp him up at some point and see how he does. So, I mean, the rehab is it's aggressive. I mean, first day out of surgery, he was doing some core things and walking, and, you know, that he'll ramp up. He'll be back in town. But he'll be ready by training camp. But we think this is something will free him up, and he won't have any more discomfort, and he'll be able to play. It was really unfortunate for him last year because, you know, like I said, we had so many he broke his thumb on a fall. We just had a few things that really kind of set us back. Would have been nice to have seen him play all year long, because we do think he has a bright future.
John, we were talking about how football and Mitchell Trubisky, how offense is repetitiously learned. When you look at a guy like Coby White and watching him throughout the summer league, how long does it take a young player to be able to anticipate how the ball is going to flow up the court and how to efficiently get it towards the hoop, and with the anticipation of the players' knowledge of each other?
Yeah, it's going to take some time. I mean, you have to look at Coby was a big time scorer in high school, and so his mindset oftentimes is to look for a shot. And the reality of our game today is the point guard position. Most of the high level point guards have a big time scoring component to them. They know how to get to the rim. They know how to shoot. It's just what it is. It's no longer, you know, the point guard who, you know, just comes off screens, always looking to pass the ball. So I think it's going to take Coby a little bit of time. I think when you look at him in the summer league, his decision making has been he's had to learn some things through that. One thing that these kids never understand when they come in this league is how much faster the game is at the NBA level, how much longer the players are in terms of, you know, arm length and reach. So they have to get accustomed to those things. I think the one good thing for us is, as our roster sits right now, Kobe can learn at his own pace. And if he comes into camp and, you know, plays great and earns opportunity, that's terrific. And I think he will. But, you know, we signed Satoransky. We still have Chris Dunn on our roster, who's a tough, competitive kid. So he's going to have an opportunity to learn. But, you know, when we look at things long term, we think Kobe's obviously got a really bright future. And, you know, you got to have guys who put the ball in the basket. And this kid has the mindset that he's going to do that.
I'm just curious, John, Russell Westbrook is the latest NBA star that is being shopped. Do you do due diligence on that? Do you make a call, or, you know, are you, in terms of the realistic approach you have, do you not even bother with it?
Well, no, everybody pays attention, obviously, to what's going on, and, right. And you know, the deals around the league. But I think every team is at kind of a different stage of development and evolution. And, you know, there are teams that are going to take a real shot at someone like that. When you have to factor into everything. I mean, you look when you look at the financial aspect of a player that's 30 going out 4 years and the amount of money that's going to be made, you know, those things can, you know, tie your hands up and kind of put your organization in a tough position. We're looking at things realistically. We understand where we're at. And like I said at the beginning, honestly, I want our group to be competitive. I want our fan base to look out at our team and say, okay, these guys are playing hard. They're showing us that they care and that there's a real chance that as their young guys develop, this is going to be a really good basketball team. The league has changed so much as contracts. You know, it used to be where you'd sign a guy to you can sometimes sign him to 6-year deals, guaranteed deals, and that limited movement. Now, through the last CBA, they've shortened the deals, and maybe one of the unintended effects is all this player movement that you're seeing now, that, you know, guys moving teams on their own and, you know, coming to free agency sooner. And that, you know, so we're trying to build this thing given our timeline, and our timeline started 2 years ago in terms of a rebuild. I think like I said earlier, when you look at the number of changes we made in the past 2 years, when you're talking about a 15-man roster, I think they're significant. I think we've upgraded our talent level while staying young, and I think our prospects of being that competitive team are high. So I just want to feel the team right now that our fan base can get behind, and that's something that I know has been tough in watching our group, especially last year when, you know, we had all the injuries and we were throwing out some guys that you know, were borderline NBA players at times. They've played hard and they're trying to make it, but it wasn't the type of product that you want to put out there. Hopefully we'll stay healthy and our fan base will be excited about the group we have.
John, thanks a ton. Always great to talk to you. Really appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks, Tom. John. Tom, how often do you get back to ND?
Not very much, you know, with broadcasting during the football season. You know, I had two nieces and, you know, my brother-in-law went there. They get there back there a lot more often than I do, John.
Yeah, me too. We're still working. See, that's the problem.
That's right.
All your classmates have retired.
Hey, no kidding. All right, fellas, good talking to you.
Thanks, John.
See you, John. That's great. That is John Paxson. Always fun to talk to him. We're going to talk to Dan and Connor next. Mully and Hall on the Score with Tom Thayer.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.